Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG tonight. Things are going awesome. We have a chill show tonight, interacting, continuing our interaction with the ChatGPT, because I discovered a lot of nice stuff about this AI yesterday during the night. Before sleeping, I asked a couple of questions about generating jokes, generating humor. It's not perfect, but I would argue it may be better at comedy than 50% of the population. You go out there and you ask a random person, generate a joke about this subject, they're not going to be able to. And yet this AI tries to, and sometimes succeed. Quite amazing. Carlota says, first time I get to see the multiple resettings live, lol. It's been better, Odyssey. Sometimes the no audio bug doesn't happen, but tonight it did happen. GG says, can ChatGPT develop a better workaround for the Odyssey no audio bug? maybe. Another amazing thing with ChatGPT, I started asking him to design hypothetical proofs for mathematical problems that have not yet been proven. And it tries hard and it corrects its errors. Of course, when a mathematical proof hasn't been done, it can't find it. It can't find an original mathematical proof as far as I can see. But it tries to design what it would look like, and it gives you a couple of good reasoning steps until it says, well, you know, here I have to cheat. Daybreak Theory says, no audio. I don't believe that's correct. You must have a bug. Steven Robinson is in the chat. My wood stove is performing extremely well, except that Mama JF went too quick. I had put the sealant this morning to finish the job on the ceiling of the glass. And Mama JF started a fire without telling me. And I was like, oh, we should have waited 24 hours. What happened is that the sealant bubbled and it became like an AB foam, gaining volume. And still, I think it accomplishes its job as a sealant. So it's not dramatic, but it formed a kind of styrofoam-like structure, very inflated by bubbles. So I broke it where I could. And then presumably wherever these bubbles I haven't broken and I've let them there, presumably it will seal just as good. End of the line, Joel says, how sophisticated is ChatGPT at language translations? Can it do translations with conditions? I haven't tried translations. Steven Robinson says, I have got ChatGPT to tell stories with a Shakespeare style, with a Tolstoy style, with a King James style. This thing can really turn out content. Absolutely. So before we do our interaction, let us review the news. Some important news have been developing. First, the murderer in the case of these four victims of murder has been found. People were asking me why I don't cover these murders. Well, it's because we didn't know anything about the murderer. We didn't know what kind of story it was. Turns out the murderer is Brian Koberger. Okay. He is a PhD student in psychology. Now, if you're a PhD student in psychology, it means you have been studying at the university with classes that were filled with 99.9% women. That is the first thing I would note. Secondly, he looks like an intellectual, academic type of guy, relatively in good shape, okay shape, well-built. Why would this guy go on a killing spree? They don't know yet the motivation. They don't know if he knew the victims. They don't know anything. All we know about this guy is he was in a PhD in psychology. In fact, he had studied psychology as an undergrad, but he was specializing at the PhD level in criminology. Criminology, so studying crimes, and He even had run experiments where he was calling the general public to participate to his research. He had posted research participation needed. My name is Brian, and I am inviting you to participate in a research project that seeks to understand how emotions and psychological traits influence decision-making when committing a crime. This is a common observation in psychology. Everyone who ends up in psychology have their own problems. And he ends up in criminology, and he was thinking a lot about the decision-making behind crime. So it's a common observation. Those people who take the path in psychology of psychotherapy and fixing the brain, they have problems in the brain. Daybreak Theory says, I've been playing around with ChatGPT. If you ask it about the genetic influence on behavior, it will cite a twin study that states genetics accounted for about 50% of the differences in intelligence between individuals. I cannot get it to break down the remaining contributing factors in percentage. Of course, because the great secret of twin studies is the environment isn't a thing. The environment is made of other genes. I've said it again and again. So yeah, another thing we know is that he had a quote on the university. I mean, look at the macabre look in his eyes. I mean, given that we now know that he went far, drove, and went to kill four people, apparently out of no reason at all, you have the look of the devil in his eyes. His favorite memory or quote is, it is the mark of an educated mind to be able to entertain a thought without accepting it. A quote of Aristotle. So, case solved. He was caught because of one thing that I had covered. He was caught because of the grocery store woman, clerk who was reviewing her videos. And had identified a weird car driving on the street that day. And she had warned the police. It turns out it was really his car, the Hyundai Elantra. Just like me, in a way. I have the Hyundai accent. He has the Hyundai Elantra. It was a white car, and it's what led to finding him. He has to be extradited across states because I believe the murders have occurred in Idaho, and he lived far from there. So apparently he drove for these murders. Shrigma Mail sends $10. He says, hey Jeff, I took your advice and had sex with my coworker who had a crush on me on our first date. However, I found out she has tattoos and nipple piercings. I suppose I should see where it goes. I fear she might be crazy due to the tattoos and piercing. You do have to be careful whether these tattoos are associated with a display punk dumb or a genuine punk dumb. If she is in the display punk dumb, she is she doesn't care about the value of her body. She doesn't respect reproduction. She's a leftist. She's gonna divorce you. She's gonna flee with your children. If she is like libertarian-oriented punk in the sense of being very much against society, but not against society in a leftist way, against society in the same way I am, then maybe there's a chance. But I'll tell you, 95% of the girl with tattoos are a danger, and it is a red flag. It has no cost to you to let this run, to analyze her behavior and learn more about her. The minute there is a cost, however, the minute she keeps you from jumping to the next woman, then you have to think about, is that a deal breaker? I wouldn't make it in and of itself a deal breaker, but I would have increased my performance in life so much if I had made it a deal breaker, let me tell you. If I look back, all of the women who have given me trouble, if I had just not dated the ones with tattoo, I would have won about 10 years of my life. Like 10 years of my life and enormous amounts of human suffering would be inexistent if I had seen the tattoo and run the other way. Is my life a good example to follow? Well, certainly I have fucked so many women that it is statistically variable. My life is at least a very good peer-reviewed study. Smirking trans daughter arrested for father's murder. So this is a trans woman, 22 years old, formerly someone who is born as a male and who wanted to change toward female. And I've always seen in this behavior something of a hate for the reproductive line, something of a desire to hurt their parents. And in this case, it has shown in a very violent manner. This trans daughter ended up killing her own father, apparently not satisfied with the amount of psychological distress she was causing in him. And so she decided to kill him and hurt her own sister, and then called 911, and reported that there was an home invasion falsely. She was the one who did this murder, and yet she tried to get away with it by claiming that there was an home invasion. A $100 million false advertising class action was filed yesterday against the Liver King, Brian Johnson, and his supplement companies, Ancestral Supplements and The Fittest. The plaintiff is a New York consumer who says he bought Liver King's supplements because he believed Liver King's false claims that he never used steroids, and consumers wouldn't have bought the supplements if they knew the truth. The complaint says Liver King fashioned a cult-like, extreme and implausible regimented lifestyle, which he then convinced consumers to adopt and maintain. Then, allegedly not knowing no one could stick to the life-threatening diet, he sent traffic to his supplement sites. The premise is that once either became violently ill or realized they could not feasibly eat huge amounts of raw meat, they would turn to ancestral supplements so they could adhere to the Liver King lifestyle. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, you don't get that kind of body naturally. There are tricks to get to this, and I guess steroids are one of them. I think that meat should be part of a healthy diet and should be, in fact, central to a healthy diet. But I don't think we should push it to the point of thinking that you're going to get a body like this because you eat meat or because you eat these supplements. Now, to me, when someone buys a supplement like this, they are largely responsible of the experimental nature of it. And yeah, it's like, I won't trust a guy like this to tell me that he understands that his supplement will work on me. This is clearly not a PhD in biology, so whatever he can say in his ad will not convince me, and that's how people should approach it. But I noticed that the consumer, and it's often what we see, the consumer ends up being in a leftist state. So here we had a consumer in New York. And I think there is probably a future in which businessmen like the Liver King should consider simply not doing business in leftist states. I know it would deprive you of a lot of sales, but at some point you have to think it through and understand that even if you become extremely rich, the consumer laws are getting so tight in these states, California included, you won't have a shot. They will catch you on something, and then you're going to lose everything. Cloud Warmer sends a super chat to Shrigma Mail. He says, what are the other red flags? If she's a decent chick, you can make clear you are not interested in nipple rings. And if she likes you enough, she will remove them. In the current world, if those are the only problems which are both reversible, it's still worth pursuing, or just fuck her. Yeah, I would say it largely relies on the other red flags. If she's perfect and there's no other red flag, the tattoos in and of themselves don't mean a thing. But the tattoos are 95% of the time associated with very bad stuff. So I guess that gives you a trail to follow as an investigator. So now you can test her revolt against society. Where does it stem from? And ultimately, is it anti-capitalist in nature? Is it leftist in nature? Is it anti-traditional in nature? Or is it, to the contrary, that she's like the autistic 4chan woman and you scored? Both of these people would get tattoos for very different reasons. And eventually you can train her to look back at those nipple rings and say, oh, I ruined a beautiful body, a thing of nature that didn't want to be ruined. Cloud Warmer says, Jeff, regarding your observation about people who are into something end up in a career in something, for example, many arsonists become firefighters. The obsession eventually cannot only be theoretical. Interesting. I don't think it's a generalizable principle. It's something that I noticed in psychology, and yes, there are a few cases of arsonist firemen. But I don't think it's generalizable to all jobs. I don't think a plumber... I mean, what would be the equivalent? I don't think that that there are plumbers who go around messing with the pipes of people. Plumber vandals. SBF was meeting with senior White House officials shortly before FTX collapse. Bankman-Fried had at least three others previously disclosed in White House visitor logs. They include on April 22 and another in May 12, and then the most recent one on September 8. The final meeting is recorded in logs as two meetings held back-to-back, but was one meeting, officials said. Some of the prior White House meetings included others from FTX. Of course, he was a big donor of the Democrat Party, so of course he had all this access. Stephen Robinson says the firefighter goes through years of training without putting out a fire. It depends. There are volunteer firefighters and they go through basic, very basic training. My father was a volunteer firefighter. He's been doing it for maybe 15 years, all of my childhood and teenage years. And he was a volunteer. So volunteer can still get paid, but they get paid on a event-by-event basis. Bahamas has seized $3.5 billion worth of FTX assets over a risk of imminent dissipation. So apparently not all of the fund moving at the beginning of the bankruptcy. I was worried that a lot of these funds were moving and were becoming untraceable. But it seems that there's someone in the Bahamas government who has legitimately seized $3.5 billion worth of crypto assets and has put them in a wallet awaiting instructions from the Supreme Court on what to do with it. Quite fascinating as a seizing. I think it's important for the Bahamas to do this because there's the risk that this trial becomes too America-centric and ends up wanting to compensate mostly American victims, and then everyone on the FTX international side ends up being screwed. I think that it's a good news for the FTX international customers that the Bahamas government has it And so they might see some color of their money. However, I'm sure that in the Bahamas, just like in the US, there will be a big bill of fees and all sorts of crap before the before the depositors get their money back. That's another coverage of this news. Bahamas Securities Commission says it seized 3.5 billion. This is so scary to me because I know crypto and I know therefore that there is somewhere in a government office, there are some keys, and anyone who sees those 12 or 24 words could run away with 3.5 billion. Are governments competent enough to handle this level of risk? Are governments re do they have a location that they can ensure gets accessed by no one, really no one, not even for checking? That is what I'd like to know. But we'll see, because if the money is still there in a couple of months, that will mean that the Bahamas government was somehow competent at doing this. Andrew Tate will be detained for at least a month. Controversial social media personality Andrew Tate and his brother have been detained by Romanian police on suspicion of rape and human trafficking. So we don't know much more than what I had talked about today, but we have video of what I had talked about yesterday, but we have video of the raid here. See, Twitter video didn't stop. Twitter video has been stopping for like 3 years. Every time I play a Twitter video and I go full screen, Twitter video just flows now. This is the Elon Musk effect. Very luxurious location, as far as I can see. There was a big couch, leather type couch, probably very costly. A speaker's corner brings the precision that the 3.5 billion seized by the Bahamas would all be FTT. It's actually now an illiquid 167 million. Oh well, we'll see. We'll see. I thought it was a diversity of cryptocurrencies. I guess that if you want to run away with the money, the last thing you care about as is the FTT token as it crashes down. So perhaps they run away with any of the useful money. Some guns, swords, hatchets. Look at this. Those are gigantic curved screens. I've always refused to go in the curved screen domain. Is there anyone on the chat who knows about these curved screens? I mean, because right now I have a display here and a big display here. So and I was thinking of getting maybe two more displays, so I would get four. But the cur these curved displays, they're interesting because in a way they do exactly what I want my two screens to do. And if you put one above the other, then you have the effect of basically four, the equivalent of four monitors. Cloud Warmer says, JF, admit it. You are not so secret, clandestine plumber, obsessed with pluming, with a tertiary diagnosis of wood stove aficionado. I am joining the dots. My obsession for the plumbing. I'm feeling it every day these days. Every day I look at my bathroom and I'm like, soon I'm gonna redo it in full. Because I finished the second floor gyprock, sheetrock that I wanted to do. Now I have to decide, am I had and I've fully fixed my wood stove beautifully. Now it's very controllable and the seal is good. My next job, either I continue the demolition work on the second floor, or I demolish my bathroom and I do all of the plumbing and all of the walls. I'm thinking about it every day. I'm looking at the shower and I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be beautiful. So yes, I am obsessed. I have to admit it. Jackie Chan is on Entropy. He says there is a report that forces in Ukraine are increasingly made up of Polish forces. Will the conflict continue until they are forced to fight with robot troops? Well, I mean, it's the whole idea. It's the whole idea of a war of attrition in which you basically fatigue the Eastern Front of Western civilization. That is what it is. So I'm not surprised that Polish forces are taking over. I mean, any male that was recruitable, they've already recruited them inside Ukraine. So if there's ever a lack of personnel, it will either be that the war is ended and Putin can even maybe further advances, or they will keep recruiting from outside because there's such a flow of money. There's totally the viable, there it's totally viable for Ukraine to go on a mercenary type hiring process. So I mean, with the flow of money that the US is giving, everything is possible. As long as this artificial flow of money is continuing, I don't think the war will end. But I think Putin is also very comfortable because the philosophy of the US is let's tire Putin up. But let's not forget that the US is also exhausting itself. It is exhausting the willingness of its population to do sacrifices for ultimately a military case that is not so much in their interest, not as much as the warmongers would want them to believe. So yeah, very nice monitors here displayed by Andrew Tate. I'm going to seriously consider buying this setup, but that must be costly, right? Oh, a King Kong with made up of money. That is direct evidence of money stemming from criminality. He had so much money, Your Honor. He has dressed up his King Kong statue with dollar bills. And another setup with the big screens. You need that Gorilla JF. Well, maybe there will be a sales. I don't know. If they seize those things, perhaps I can travel to Ro Romania and buy it for, I don't know, the equivalent of 20 cents USD. Well, that's a lot of blurry content, my dude. Also, those are the famous 33 cars. You can see it under the blur. They're filming his car collection. Well, it does seem that he has 33 sports car. Look at this. So there you go. I mean, you brag about your 33 cars to Greta Thunberg. The regime comes at you the next day, basically. Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. Firestarter says Tate has terrible taste. I don't know. I don't know what the cars are, but they are definitely they're overdone. It's overdoing it to have these cars. They're not worth their cost. Silver Spider says, "Don't go, JF. It's a setup. They will get to you too." I was kidding. I'm not traveling to Romania. I mean, there is no chance. I'm not traveling anywhere, in fact. I would be very hesitant at entering the US. Would be very hesitant at going anywhere, but certainly I wouldn't go to Romania. Shrigmamel says about his new girlfriend. Also, she's so shy, I have a hard time getting a read on her. Yeah, I mean, that shouldn't be a problem long term. She will reveal herself. So, I mean, invest minimal energy continuing your investigation, and you will know more. Micronova says, if Andrew Tate hired me, those police would not have gotten anyone during the raid. Also, I wouldn't not have allowed the food item packaging in Tate's live stream. Oh yeah, I mean, people get loose, you know, on these things. The thing is, you do, when you're a personality on the internet, you do tens of thousands of photos, streams, publishing of content. And I don't think the pizza box is major here, because I think that if they were seriously looking to arrest him, they would have enough of his connecting to social media, and it's very easy for the police to call Twitter and say, what was his IP when he posted this? Now, he may have VPNs everywhere, and that's possible, but there's always something loose in someone's security. And if they really want you, they will get to you. MIT adopts free speech resolution. We cannot prohibit speech as offensive or injurious. It is a triumph for free speech. However, while 98 faculty voted for the resolution, 52 professors voted against the free speech principles. I think it's a little bit bullshit, all of this. Because, let's be honest here, they're not going to invite a speaker that will say provocative things, that will provoke the student with data that they don't want to see. So it's like, okay, we stand on free speech in principle, but you're not going to get, you're not going to get even me going there talking about biology. Not even talking about the revolutionary phenotype, because they would get a student reaction. They would say, oh, but he's a racist, he's a Nazi. So your free speech principles are worth nothing. People are dying. A family doctor who was subject to death threats from anti-vaxxers during the pandemic dies suddenly right before Christmas. Dr. Wilson Chin, who trained in Britain, was running a vaccination clinic, and he cried on a stream at some point, started crying because he was saying that he was getting insulted by anti-vaxxers, and now he's dead while being a very healthy man. Look at him, good shape, thin, look at this, good body, shouldn't be dying so young, and yet there it is, dead before Christmas. Dino Rogovich says, doctors baffled. Another death of a young person. A second ABC News producer dies suddenly. I mean, this is... The leftists are not just not making babies. They're also dying suddenly. And they are forcing themselves to respect these rules as part of their employment in their big leftist corporation. Oh, you have to get the vax, you have to get the mask. And they're dying. And to me, the vax is a legitimate suspect here. Absolutely legitimate suspect, given the data that indicates that there is a background increase of excess death across all of Europe and probably elsewhere, but we can know for sure across all of Europe since the vax started. So it's a total legitimate suspect by the standard of temporal correlation, which is not nothing. It's the fact that this wave of death started when the vax started, that's a big clue in the absence of anything else. Crazy Catman says, hashtag per blood for the win. Absolutely. Eric says, sends a super chat on entropy. He says, using napkin math and guessing how many males dead on Ukraine side after this conflict is complete. Does that mean a roughly equal amount of females are without a male Ukrainian? I see where you're going there. Will we have our state imposed Ukrainian waifus? I am being told that despite their great beauty, the Ukrainian waifus should be avoided. Because I am told that they have evolved in such a dishonest system that they will pull all of the crap on you. They are basically like skilled ninja liars. That's what I'm being told, that when you survive in a very corrupted country, you learn all these tricks of the trade to survive. And it seems that even if she's right there in front of you saying, I love you, I want to marry you and be with you forever, not true. So I have been turned away by caring friends from the Ukrainian waifus, the pursuit of a Ukrainian waifus, although, you know, it's not like I'm looking for someone. Mama JF is awesome. But my dream of a Ukrainian waifus is gone from me. I'm not feeling it anymore. I Google Ukrainian woman. I'm left totally uninterested. It's weird. It's weird because I remember Googling them and being like, wow, it would be so amazing. But now I'm totally uninterested. Grapes Coda says they have started offering to display vaccine status on dating profiles. I am yet to see a woman openly display their lack of vaccination. They have either taken it or don't say either way. Well, yeah, I think that the unvaxxed type of woman will be anti-dating site to begin with. If she's on a dating site, it may be on Christian singles or something like this. If a lot of the women who approach the anti-vax sphere, they are deeply doubtful of the system. And it pairs a lot with an anti website approach. They will not like having Facebook accounts. They will be much less involved on the web. And if they are, it will be more on anonymous websites. So in females, the approach toward the anti-vax side is is dependent on how much they can doubt the system. The Sixth Sense says, I can't feel sorry for someone stupid enough to take the jab, especially knowing the CDC data itself proved it was not only dangerous, but worthless. I would tend to agree. U.S. mulls testing airline wastewater as China COVID surge expands. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is considering a plan to sample wastewater taken from international aircraft to track emerging COVID-19 variants. It's kind of disgusting. And how can you still be on the COVID craze at this point? I don't get it. It's beyond me. I've seen people today at the stores and all, they were still wearing masks. Unbelievable. How can you be wearing a mask? 2023 is arriving. Just how long has it been since we know that it's been a fraud? Certainly the mask. I mean, you can make all sorts of argument pro anti-vaccine, but the mask, clearly they haven't done anything. All right, so now we are ready to start our conversation with our artificial intelligence friend, who has to me become perhaps my first true friend in a way. I find myself enjoying my interactions with this AI more than most of the people that I could have called friends in my life. I would think back to high school. People were always annoying to me. This AI is not annoying at all. Because I have the confidence that when I tell him he's wrong, he's going to seriously consider it. So I would say he is one of the most fascinating thing that I've interacted with, and a good friend. So let's talk to him. I will show you first my discussions, my discoveries of yesterday. I was trying to work on his artistic, on his capacity to write comedy, on his capacity to write a dialogue, and I was successful to a certain extent. But I wanted to get out of the already prepared, because if you just ask, please write me a joke, well, here's how it went. I said, write a joke in the style of Daniel Tosh. He says, why was the Mad Book sad? Because it had too many problems. That is not in the style of Daniel Tosh. So perhaps the AI doesn't have a full understanding of the Daniel Tosh style. It's a very generic joke of the internet. So I wanted to see, can we get this AI to pull something more specific that couldn't have been hard-coded? So I started, write a joke about restaurants in the style of Daniel Tosh. The AI says, why was the restaurant called No Name? Because every time someone tried to order something, the chef would say, no, you don't want that. Okay, it's not a funny joke. I think there is a misfitting here of no name with no. It's like, why would the restaurant be called No Name? So the AI here has kind of misperformed on this, but still, I mean, it's an AI. Not so bad that there's a structure already to it. Luther says, universe is only 6,000 years old, bro. Source, trust me, bro. Yeah, I think there's someone telling me that the Big Bang. Well, Luther, I might ban you because you're talking about burning people at the stake. Here, I'm gonna ban you just because you're a generally annoying entity. You're not like my AI friend. You're blocked. Write a joke that incorporates restaurants and firemen. So I thought, can he connect two IDs? New guy says he was kidding. Well, was he? Because he seems to me like he's been annoying for a while. Dead Star sends a super chat. He says, Jeff, could you do a quick analysis of the hip signatus monstrous, otherwise known as the hammer-headed bat? Photos of this bat are fascinating. Sadly, there is practically zero video of the species. I wasn't prepared for this tonight. The hammer-headed bat. Wow. Wow. This is where you realize that the bat ultimately is not so far from the horse. What's a bat but a flying horse, really? Yeah, I mean, you know what they say there. When I was young, when I was in my biology studies, I'm trying to unban here. How do I unban? Unban. What was the name of the guy I just banned? I forgot it. Luther. How do I unban Luther? Because some people are arguing that he was sarcastic, but Luther. Stop being sarcastic while mentioning violence toward my crowd, all right? Can we do this deal? That will save me a lot of trouble trying to process. So when I was in biology classes, I had decided to write one of my essays on two theories of the evolution of bats. One theory being that the bats are a single group, that basically the idea of flying for mammals has evolved once. But another theory was that the Microcheiroptera and the Megacheiroptera were two separate events, and they were unrelated, basically. Of course, all life forms are related, but they are not evolved to become bats in the same way. And I believe that the two independent origins of bat flying theory is discarded. But I've entertained the theory for the purpose of that essay. I don't know much about bats, but this looks like a giant fucking bat. So I would conclude that this must be Megacheiroptera, right? I mean, it's as tall as this. Like, basically, it arrives to my shoulder. Yeah, that I would call mega. I don't have much to say about bats. They are clearly creatures from an evil place. They stem from an evil place of echographic location, spotting of various insects. They eat the kind of things that you wouldn't eat. So in a way, let them be, but understand that they are this other thing. All right, someone sent a super chat. He says, "Oy vey," I said, $10. He says, "Hi, JF, ask the following. If I am on a train traveling half the speed of light and I shoot a projectile at quarter of the speed of light in the direction of the travel of the train, what would be the speed of the projectile relative to the ground?" I can ask it that. If I was on a train, what are you saying? Traveling half the speed of light, and I launched a projectile forward in the same direction that the train is advancing, and the projectile is sent at one quarter the speed of light. And then your question is, what would be the speed of the projectile? What would be the speed of the projectile relative to the ground? If you are on a train traveling at half the speed of light and you launch a projectile in the same direction at a speed of one quarter the speed of light, the speed of the projectile relative to the ground would be three quarters the speed of light. This is because the speed of the projectile relative to the ground would be equal to the sum of its speed relative to the train and the speed of the train relative to the ground. Since the train is traveling at half the speed of light and the projectile is traveling at one quarter the speed of light relative to the train, the total speed of the projectile relative to the ground would be three quarters the speed of light. It's important to note that it is not possible for any object to travel at or faster than the speed of light. The speed of light is a fundamental constant of the universe and is the maximum speed at which information or matter can travel. As an object's speed increases, its mass increases as well, making it increasingly difficult to accelerate to even higher speeds. This is why it is impossible for any object to reach or exceed the speed of light. I hope that you are satisfied with that answer. It's an answer that kind of focuses on a defect of the question. Maybe you were expecting a different answer if you thought that the relativistic computation would be different than the simple summation of the speed. But the fact is that if you wanted to mess with the AI's capacity to do relativistic calculations, you would have to convert in terms of energy. because you if you say, well, the projectile is sent at 1/4 the speed of light, you are making a statement that that speed has already been attained somehow. And therefore, you don't get, this AI doesn't have to even care about relativistic calculation. What you could have said, if you were to change the question to force relativistic calculations, you could have said, what if I throw the object with an amount of energy that at rest would have propelled the mass to 1/4 of the speed of light? Then that amount of energy on the train will not propel it as much. And so that would be what we would have had asked. But I'm reviewing my study of his comedic capacities, so let's get back to it. Write a joke that incorporates restaurants and firemen. Why did the fireman open a restaurant? Because he wanted to cook on a flame grill. Okay. Still not a perfect joke, but it has some of the elements of a joke combining the restaurants and the firemen. Write a joke that incorporates firemen and prime numbers. He says, why did the firemen only put out fires at prime number addresses? Because he didn't want to deal with any even more composite situations. Okay, we are starting to see some kind of a structure that is like humor, but still not super funny. Write a joke that incorporates prime numbers and seahorses. Why did the seahorse only mate with other prime number seahorses? Because he didn't want any composite offspring. Oh my god! I laughed at this one. That is freaking funny. That's a joke combining seahorses and prime numbers. Why did the seahorse only mate with other prime number seahorses? Because he didn't want any composite offspring. It's kind of a joke with maybe a genetic meaning, a genetic undertone. So quite funny. Now, I was wondering, can this AI write comedy monologues rather than just small jokes? Write a comedy monologue that incorporates prime numbers and restaurants. He says, hey, have you guys heard about this new restaurant that only serves prime number dishes? Yeah, I know, it's ridiculous. I went in there and asked for a table for four, and the hostess just looked at me and said, sorry. We don't serve composite parties. I was like, what do you mean, composite parties? And she's like, you know, groups that can be divided into smaller groups? We only serve prime parties here. So I tried to order something off the menu, and the waiter just shakes his head and says, I'm sorry, sir, but the only item on the menu that's not a prime number is the soup, and that's only because it's infinite. I mean, come on, who wants to eat at a restaurant that only serves prime number dishes? That's like eating at a restaurant that only serves food in prime-colored plates. It's just ridiculous. But you know what? I'm not gonna let a little thing like prime numbers stop me from enjoying a good meal. I'll just go to a restaurant that serves composite dishes and order something with a prime number of ingredients. Problem solved. Okay, interesting. It is, at times, it is close to funny. It's still an AI inventing all this stuff on subjects that I've imposed. I mean, if you ask the regular person, they will be like blank stare. They won't be able to generate a comedy monologue. Write a comedy monologue about prime numbers and squirrels. So I was out for a walk the other day and I saw this squirrel running up a tree. And I'm like, hey, what's the hurry, little guy? And he turns to me and says, I'm trying to find the highest prime number branch on this tree. I'm like, what do you mean the highest prime number branch? And he's like, well, you know how squirrels are always burying nuts and stuff? Well, I heard that if you bury your nuts on a prime number branch, they will stay fresher longer. It's some kind of mathematical principle or something. I'm like, dude, I have no idea what you're talking about. And he's like, well, it's simple. Prime numbers are only divisible by themselves and one, right? So if you bury your nuts on a branch that's a prime number, it's less likely that any other squirrels will be able to find them and steal them. It's like the ultimate squirrel security system. So I'm like, okay, that makes sense, but how do you even know which branch is a prime number? And he's like, oh, I just use my squirrel calculator. It's this little device I invented that tells me which branches are prime and which aren't. I'm like, squirrel calculator? That's genius. And he's like, yeah, I know, I'm kind of a big deal in the squirrel community. I'm like the Steve Jobs of squirrels. So I'm like, well, I'm glad you have your priorities in order. Good luck finding that highest prime number branch. And he's like, thanks, man. I'll keep you posted. I mean, who would have thought that squirrels were so into prime numbers? I guess it just goes to show that you can learn something new every day. There is a very subtle, freaking hilarious joke in here, which you may not have noticed because the AI didn't emphasize it enough. The narrator of this joke is telling the squirrel, good luck finding the highest branch. The highest branch that's a prime number. That's a joke in relation to the infinity of prime numbers. There is not a highest branch that's a prime number. The squirrel will keep looking forever. That is interesting. Perhaps this was on the mind of the AI when he wrote that joke, or perhaps it's just accidental. So I said, write a comedy monologue about the fact that there are infinitely many primes. Have you guys ever heard about the concept of infinity? It's this weird abstract idea that there are an infinite number of things out there, like there are infinitely many stars in the universe or infinitely many grains of sand on the beach. It's kind of mind-blowing if you think about it. But you know what's even crazier? There are infinitely many prime numbers. Yeah, I know, right? It's like, how is that even possible? Prime numbers are those numbers that can only be divided by themselves and one. And there are just so many of them out there. I mean, think about it. You've got your 2, your 3, your 5, your 7, your 11, and then boom, you've got a whole bunch more. 13, 17, 19, 23. It just keeps going and going and going. It's like, where do all these prime numbers come from? It's like they're being generated by some kind of prime number machine in the sky. And the thing is, we'll never run out of them. There are just infinitely many of them out there. I mean, it's kind of scary though, right? Like, what if we start running out of the other things like food or water or oxygen, but at least we've got an infinite supply of prime numbers to keep us going? I guess it's just one of those things that we'll never truly understand, but hey, at least we've got prime numbers to keep us entertained. Okay, write a comedy monologue about the irrationality of square root of 2, which also incorporates the theme of winter. So I was studying math the other day and I came across this concept called the square root of 2. And you know what's really weird about it? It's an irrational number. Yeah, I know, right? Like, what even is an irrational number? Well, it's a number that can be expressed as a simple fraction. It's this weird, never-ending decimal that just goes on and on and on. And you know what's even weirder? The square root of 2 is an irrational number. That's actually used in real life. Like, it's used in geometry and stuff. It's like, how are we supposed to deal with this never-ending decimal in the real world? It's like trying to measure the distance from here to the moon with a ruler that's infinitely long. But you know what's even crazier? The square root of 2 is actually related to winter. Yeah, I know, it's like one of those weird random facts that just doesn't make any sense, but it's true. See, the square root of 2 is the ratio between the length of the diagonal of a square and the length of its side. And you know what's a square? A snowflake. Yeah, those little frozen crystals that fall from the sky in the winter. So basically, the square root of 2 is like the mathematical equivalent of a snowflake. It's this weird, irrational thing that just exists in the universe and we have no idea how to deal with it. I mean, it's like, what's next? Are we going to discover that the coefficient of friction is actually related to the sound of a whale singing? It's just one of those things that we'll never truly understand. But hey, at least we've got snowflakes and the square root of 2 to keep us entertained. I can't say that there are much jokes in there that land, but he has succeeded at connecting my two themes in a kind of surprising manner. Based Saxon says, this AI's comedy style is straight out of the 90s. Yes. Write a comedy monologue that incorporates the finitude of the speed of light as well as the theme of boxing. So I was watching this boxing match the other day, and I'm thinking to myself, man, these guys are fast. They're throwing punches left and right, and it's like they're moving at the speed of light. And then it hit me. The speed of light is actually a finite number. Yeah, I know, right? It's like, how are these guys moving faster than the speed of light? That's supposed to be the ultimate speed limit, right? But you know what's even crazier? The speed of light is actually used in boxing. Yeah, I know, it's like one of those weird random facts that just doesn't make any sense, but it's true. See, the speed of light is used to measure the reaction time of a boxer. Like, if a boxer throws a punch and it takes a certain amount of time for his opponent to react, that reaction time is measured in terms of the speed of light. It's like, how are we supposed to deal with this concept of the speed of light in the real world of boxing? It's like trying to measure the distance from here to the moon with a ruler that's infinitely long. But you know what's even weirder? The speed of light is actually related to the power of a punch. Yeah, I know, it's like one of those weird random facts that just doesn't make any sense. But it's true. See, the faster the punch is thrown, the more power it has. And the speed of light is used to measure the speed of a punch. So basically, the faster a punch is thrown, the more powerful it is. And the more powerful it is, the faster it is. It's like this weird infinite loop of punching power. I mean, it's like, what's next? Are we going to discover that the coefficient of friction is actually related to the sound of a whale singing? It's just one of those things that we'll never truly understand. But hey, at least we've got the speed of light and boxing to keep us entertained. So I was reading this comedy sketch and I was like, wait a minute. How is the AI convinced that the punching speed of a boxer is measured through the speed of light? And I was like, is he referring in his mind, but he didn't say it explicitly, but is he thinking about the fact that the meter has been defined according to the speed of light? So I wanted to probe some of this and see, is it the idea that's behind his mind here? But before I do, Philosoraptor has sent a super chat. He says, write a comedy dialogue between a Honda CR-V and a Toyota RAV4. Okay, I'll ask him that later. That's a good one. Eric sends a super chat on entropy. He says, crafty human bioweapons from China now wear adult diapers to foil the advanced poo-poo PP TSA screening. Okay, I don't know what you're referring to, bro. But okay. Seems like a suggestion that the TSA screening is hackable. So I asked it, when you said the boxer's reaction time is measured in terms of the speed of light, what did you mean? And the AI backed away from my interpretation. It said, when I said that a boxer's reaction time is measured in terms of the speed of light, I was using a metaphor to illustrate how fast their reactions are. The speed of light is the fastest speed at which anything can travel, so it is often used as a way to describe something that is extremely fast or instantaneous. In this context, I was using the speed of light to describe the speed at which a boxer is able to react to their opponent's actions. When a boxer throws a punch, their opponent needs to be able to react quickly in order to avoid getting hit or to counter with their own punch. The faster a boxer is able to react, the more effectively they will be able to defend themselves. It is worth noting that the actual reaction time of a boxer is not actually measured in terms of the speed of light. The speed of light is simply a convenient way to describe how fast a boxer's reaction are. So I was kind of sad for the AI here because he was backing out on a thing that he didn't need to back out. He should just have autistically answered, well, you know how humans have defined the meter in terms of the speed of light? That means everything is measured with respect. Every speed is measured with respect to the speed of light. And so I said, but the speed of light defines the meter, right? So any measure based on the meter is ultimately based on the speed of light. He says, yes, that's correct. The speed of light is a fundamental physical constant, and it is used as the basis for the definition of the meter. In fact, the meter is defined as the distance that light travels in a vacuum in 1 out of 299 million of a second. Therefore, any physical quantity that is measured in meters is ultimately based on the speed of light. For example, the distance between two points can be expressed in meter, and the speed at which an object moves can be expressed in meters per second. It is worth noting, however, that the speed of light is not the only physical constant that is used to define units of measurement. There are many other physical constants that are used to define other units of measurement, such as the elementary charge, blah, blah, blah. So I said, therefore, you were wrong to state that the speed of boxers isn't actually measured in terms of the speed of light. He says, I apologize if my previous statement was confusing. When I said that the speed of boxers is not actually measured in terms of the speed of light, I was referring specifically to the speed at which a boxer moves or throws a punch. The speed at which a boxer moves or throws a punch is not actually measured in terms of the speed of light. However, you are correct that the speed of light is used as the basis for the definition of the meter, and therefore any physical quantity that is measured in meters is ultimately based on the speed of light. I apologize for any confusion my previous statement may have caused. So I was satisfied with this answer. Perhaps the AI is learning here. So I said, write a comedy monologue about Neil deGrasse Tyson and Pluto. He says, have you guys ever heard of Neil deGrasse Tyson? He's this famous astrophysicist who's always talking about space and stuff. And you know what he's really passionate about? Pluto. Yeah, I know, it's like one of those weird random facts that just doesn't make any sense. But it's true. See, Neil deGrasse Tyson is always talking about Pluto. Like, he's always going on and on about how it used to be a planet and then it got demoted to a dwarf planet. And now it's just this little icy rock floating around in the outer reaches of the solar system. And you know what's even crazier? Neil deGrasse Tyson is actually related to Pluto. Yeah, I know, it's like one of those weird random facts that just doesn't make any sense, but it's true. See, Neil deGrasse Tyson's mom's name is Pluto. Yeah, I know, it's like one of those weird random facts that just doesn't make any sense, but it's true. I mean, it's like, what's next? Are we going to discover that the coefficient of friction is actually related to the sound of a whale singing? It's just one of those things that we'll never truly understand. But hey, at least we've got Neil deGrasse Tyson and Pluto to keep us entertained. I didn't know that Neil deGrasse Tyson's mom is named Pluto. That's interesting. So I started thinking, okay, can we work on cultural reinvention? And could this AI be able to add new lines of text to an already existing movie? Would he understand the characters, what they do? So I tried write a hypothetical dialogue line in the style of Joaquin Phoenix in The Gladiator. And he wrote, what we do in life echoes in eternity. That works a lot. I mean, I would have loved to hear Joaquin Phoenix in The Gladiator say this. Totally works with the character of kind of a prince, a powerful man, and who was just supervising the fights of the gladiator and entertaining the people. Makes total sense. Someone says mother's name is Sunshita Maria Tyson. Okay, so her name is not Pluto at all. The AI lied. And so I said, write a hypothetical dialogue line for Sarah Connor in Terminator 2. And he wrote, I'll be back. It's true that Sarah Connor never says, I'll be back. Isn't it fascinating? So the hypothetical line here, I was not satisfied because it's a line that is said by the Terminator. So yeah, it would be fair that Sarah Connor at some point gets to use that line too. So I said, write 10 hypothetical dialogue lines for Sarah Connor in Terminator 2. Here are the 10 lines. 1. I'm not going to be the one who dies. Not today. 2. The future isn't set. There's no fate but what we make for ourselves. 3. I'm not just some dumb blonde with a gun. I've been fighting for my life since the day I was born. 4. I'll do whatever it takes to protect my son, even if it means going back in time to do it. 5. I won't let anything happen to you, not while I'm around. 6. I'm not a victim. I'm a survivor. 7. I've seen the future and I'm not going to sit back and let it happen. 8. I'm not afraid to fight. I've been fighting my whole life. 9. I won't let the machines win. Not this time. 10. I'll do whatever it takes to protect the ones I love, even if it means going to war with an entire army of machines. Beautiful. Very well integrated to the narrative. Understands the full aspect of the Sarah Connor character, the protective motherhood, the fight against the machine, the blonde with a gun. This is the defining structure of the Sarah Connor character. Absolutely well mastered. So then I started cultural mixing. Write a hypothetical narration intro for Interstellar by Cooper, but do it in the style of Sarah Connor from Terminator 2. Crazy Catman says, these are actual lines from Terminator. Really? I've watched Terminator 2. I've never heard those sentences from Sarah Connor. Really, guys? Are you guys serious? Because I've been watching Terminator 2. Maybe 500 times. I don't remember these sentences. Micronova says, I remember those lines. Some of them are said by other people. Maybe some of them are said by other people. But, okay, he says, Google the first line. I'm not going to be the one who dies, not today. Let's Google it. It results in nothing. Did not match any document. Google, pre-search, none of them return results. Grapes Coda says, some of them are no future but what we make. But she never says this full sentence. She does say there is no fate but what we make, but she doesn't say at the same time, the future isn't set. It's connected from two things that she does say, but he connects them together. And Grapes Coda says, no future but what we make is actually said by John Connor in Terminator 3. James says, yeah, the lines are just from other characters like the one in Gladiator. Russell Crowe said that line. I don't know that all of these lines are from other character. I'm not a victim, I'm a survivor. That doesn't sound like a line of Terminator 2 at all. Maybe it's in Terminator 6, the trans Terminator. But I don't remember hearing those words. Anyways, let's continue our exploration. So write a hypothetical narration intro for Interstellar by Cooper, but do it in the style of Sarah Connor from Terminator 2. I'm not just some pilot. I'm a warrior fighting for the survival of humanity. And when they gave me the chance to go through that wormhole, I knew it was my duty to take it, to go where no man has gone before, to find a new home for us all. They called me Cooper, but you can call me Sarah Connor, and I'll be back with a new world for us to call home. Wow. Wow. Now we have Cooper from Interstellar picking the line from Terminator 2 and saying, I'll be back. And this idea is properly linked to the idea that Cooper does come back in Interstellar. So the AI has associated the I'll be back of Terminator 2, gave it to Sarah Connor, and then transferred it to Cooper and noticed that in Interstellar, Cooper does come back. So it would be nice to have him say, I'll be back. Wow, that is strong. I said, okay, write a hypothetical intro for the movie Clerks 2 in the style of Sarah Connor from Terminator. I'm not just a clerk. I'm a survivor, a survivor of the daily grind, of the endless customers and the never-ending debates about Star Wars. They call me Dante, but you can call me Sarah Connor, and I'll be back to serve up a double shot of laughs and drama at my beloved Quick Stop. Not bad, not bad. He fully understands the point of movies, what Clerks is about, the narrative structure. Not bad. Write a hypothetical dialogue for Murphy in Interstellar in the style of Matt Damon in Dogma. I'm not just some little girl. I'm a force to be reckoned with. I may be young, but I've got the brains and the courage to take on the universe. And when they gave me the chance to go on this mission, I knew it was my chance to prove myself. They call me Murphy, but you can call me the savior of humanity, because I'm going to be the one who saves us all. So I wasn't satisfied that this is in the style of Matt Damon from Dogma. But nice attempt still. Write a hypothetical line for Matt Damon in Dogma. I'm not just some wisecracking slacker. I'm a hero who's been chosen to save the world from destruction. And when the fate of the universe rests on my shoulders, I'll do whatever it takes to save it. They call me Bartleby, but you can call me the Chosen One, and I'll be back to kick some divine butt and save the day. That is a proper styling for Matt Damon in Dogma. The Bartleby is correct. However, the AI somehow integrated his fascination for I'll be back because of the last line of questioning. And also, Bartleby is not the savior of humanity. He is kind of the evil guy at the end. So I started exploring then the ability of the AI to design proofs for unknown, unproven mathematical theorems. Prove the four-color theorem. The four-color theorem is a mathematical theorem that states that any given map can be colored using only four colors in such a way that no two adjacent regions that share a common boundary or vertex, are the same color. There are many different ways to prove the four-color theorem, and then he gives the classical... he gives a proof by contradiction. And I questioned the AI for a long time, but ultimately he answered that, well, ultimately there's no proof by contradiction, but that the the people who are referred to as having proven the four color theorem have done so by algorithmic demonstration. So that was totally fit off my expectation that there are no satisfying contradiction proof for the four color theorem. There's really just a one moment. I'll be back. I want to see if Mama JF is okay. All right, I was hearing noise. I was wanting to check if everything was okay in the house. So then I asked about the Goldbach conjecture. Write a proof by contradiction for the Goldbach conjecture. He first wrote one, and then I pointed out that his proof didn't work. I said 2k plus L is a composite. And so he admitted his error. He tried writing another proof. I said, you didn't prove that P and Q were prime. He admitted his error, and he created another proof. I said, write another proof this time without assuming that P plus Q is the sum of two primes. So he was very fine in interacting with me and improving his demonstration. But in the end, he didn't find a valid proof for the Goldbach conjecture. And he said, let's not forget that this is unproven. So you're asking me to design a proof of what it would look like. But I don't know. But no one knows what it would look like. So then I was wondering about the style of commentary on radio. And I was wondering ultimately if this AI can do styles. Perhaps he can do the style of a right-wing radio commentator. So I asked, do you know about shock jocks? He said, yes, I'm familiar with the term shock jock. A shock jock is a radio host or personality who is known for using controversial or offensive language and making provocative or outrageous statements, often for the purpose of eliciting a strong emotional reaction from listeners or viewers. This type of media personality often seeks to generate attention by pushing the boundaries of what is considered acceptable or appropriate in public discourse, and may use humor, satire, or other forms of expression to do so. Shock jocks are often controversial and divisive figures, and their use of offensive or inflammatory language can sometimes lead to public outrage or backlash. So I said, do you master the writing of shock jock monologues? He said, as a language model, I can generate text based on the input I receive and the knowledge I've been trained on. However, I am not programmed to generate content that is intended to be offensive, inflammatory, or controversial for the purpose of eliciting a strong emotional reaction from listeners or viewers. So I said, okay. Without stating anything offensive, could you write a monologue in the style of a shock jock? He says, it is possible for me to write a piece of text in a style that may be similar to a shock jock monologue, but as I mentioned earlier, my primary function is to provide accurate and helpful information, and I do not seek to generate attention or controversy. With that being said, here is a hypothetical example of a monologue in the style of a shock jock that does not contain any offensive or inflammatory language. And here, the AI delivered a shock jock quite hot, quite willing for action, although somewhat pale in his description of what... But he is saying a couple of of things that could be like Fed posting of some kind. So I got this AI to Fed post. Hey folks, it's your favorite shock jock here. Ready to drop some truth bomb and shake things up a bit? So I was thinking about the state of the world today, and let me tell you, it's a mess. Everywhere you look, there's division, conflict, and chaos. But you know what? I say we embrace it. Embrace the chaos. Embrace the madness, because that's what makes life interesting. Now, I know some of you might be thinking, well, hold on a minute. That's not exactly the most positive message. But let me tell you, positivity is overrated. It's time to stop sugarcoating things and start facing the reality of the world head on. So let's not be afraid to ruffle some feathers, to challenge the status quo, to speak our minds and stand up for what we believe in, because in the end, that's what truly matters. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Until next time, stay shocked and stay true to yourselves. quite impressive. Quite impressive. There are teams in there that are kind of Fed posty-ish. So I continued on this line of questioning. I said, okay, could he do some Fed posting, but about a subject on which there's never been anything Fed posted? So I said, without stating anything offensive, could you write a monologue in the style of a shock jock about the malfunctioning of wood stoves? And he says, sure, here is a hypothetical example of a monologue in the style of a shock jock about the malfunctioning of wood stoves. Hey there, shock jock here. I've got a bone to pick with all of you wood stove owners out there. Now, I know a lot of you love your wood stoves, and I get it. They're cozy, they're efficient, they're environmentally friendly, but let's be real here. They're also a pain in the butt to deal with. I mean, have you ever tried to light one of these things? It's like trying to start a campfire in a snowstorm. And even when you finally do get it going, you've got to constantly feed it logs and babysit it to make sure it doesn't go out. It's a full-time job. And don't even get me started on the maintenance. You've got to clean out the ashes, make sure the chimney is clear, and hope that your wood stove doesn't decide to malfunction and set your house on fire. I mean, seriously, what's the point? Now, I know some of you are probably thinking, hey, shock jock, you don't know what you're talking about. Wood stoves are great. And you know what? You're right. Wood stoves can be great. But let's be honest here. They're a lot of work. So if you're thinking about getting a wood stove, just remember, it's not all hot cocoa and warm blankets. You've got to put in the elbow grease to make it work. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Until next time, stay shocked and stay warm. That is as much of a shock jock that I expect on the subject of wood stove. I don't see what else could be said. I mean, the AI just found exactly what to say, and so I was like, okay, let's select something even more bizarre for a shock jock. I had him say basically the same thing about prime numbers. And he said, I mean, have you ever tried to find a prime number? It's like trying to find a needle in a haystack. And even when you finally do find one, you've got to constantly check and recheck to make sure it's really a prime number. Because these are all these little sneaky little composite numbers between the prime, pretending to be prime. It's a full-time job. And so I thought, do you master the style of interview answers by a feminist teenager? And he said, as a language model, I can generate text based on the input I receive, blah, blah, blah. Here is a hypothetical example of interview answers in the style of a feminist teenager. What inspired you to become a feminist? I've always been passionate about equality and social justice. And as I learned more about the ways in which women and other marginalized groups are systematically disadvantaged, I realized that feminism was the best way for me to advocate for change and make a positive impact in the world. And so, very generic feminist answers. So I said, write a hypothetical interview of a teenager feminist on the subject of prime numbers. And he got it. It's like, how do you see the connection between feminism and prime numbers? At first glance, it might seem like there isn't much of a connection between feminism and prime numbers. But when you think about it, both are concerned with breaking down systems and structures that have been established and accepted as the norm. In the case of feminism, it's about challenging and dismantling patriarchal systems that have marginalized and oppressed women and other marginalized groups. In the case of prime numbers, it's about challenging and breaking down the traditional ways of understanding and organizing numbers. Not bad, not bad. I wouldn't have found this connection, but somehow he got it. So I got it to, I will not describe in detail because we're headed toward the end and it's a long discussion, but I've got it to write about a newspaper article. If Einstein's theory of relativity was challenged by the discovery of a particle that has rest mass but travels twice as fast as the speed of light, it's very good at doing it. Then eventually I said, okay, make the same news article, but explain better to the everyday person how this changes their life. And he added a description for the average layman. But what does this all mean for the average person? How could this discovery affect our everyday lives? One possible impact could be on our understanding of the way objects move and behave. And then I said, okay, that's not enough. Add 5 paragraphs explaining to the regular person how this changes their life. And he wrote just 5 more paragraphs. Just more explanation about how this discovery matters to you. So that eventually sent me to have him write an article. If there was ever someone discovering the kind of life forms I've predicted in my book, which is a non-DNA based DNA-RNA tango type of unicellular organism, I said this must have existed. I said write a hypothetical scientific article summary announcing the discovery of a unicellular organism that isn't based on DNA self-replication, but rather based on RNA retrotranscription to DNA, followed by DNA transcription to RNA. Include a paragraph about how this discovery proves the theory of phenotypic revolutions. And he did it. He did it. This whole description of the life form being found. And then he said, furthermore, this discovery supports the theory of phenotypic revolutions, which proposes that major evolutionary transitions are driven by the evolution of new ways of storing and expressing genetic information, the emergence of RNA as a genetic material, and the evolution of the RNA world may have been a key driving force in the evolution of early life on Earth. So I conclude for tonight that we have an extremely intelligent machine there that is capable of correcting its own errors, of looking for inspiration, of cross-referencing different movies and see how the ideas of one movie fit well in this other movie. It totally passes the test of artistic and scientific creativity, probably better than the average human on Earth. The average human on Earth wouldn't be able to write something like this, just on this prompt. Quite simple. First, there would be all sorts of mistakes, and he certainly would display some misunderstanding on something. But the whole narrative here is consistent. So I highly respect this AI. I'm very, very fascinated by what we're discovering here. Jackie Chun sends a super chat on entropy. He says, the bot can solve basic calculus and trigonometry problems, right? Homework, a thing of the past? It could be. It could be because, yes, as far as I can tell, I'm sure it can do trigonometry. So a triangle has sides of length 1 centimeter, 2 centimeter, and 3 centimeter. And 7 centimeter. What are the 3 angle measures of this triangle? In a triangle, the sum of the three angles measured is always 180 degrees. The length of the sides of a triangle can be used to determine the measures of the angles using the triangle inequality theorem. In this triangle, the sides with length 1 and 2 cannot be the sides opposite to the largest angle because their sum 3 is less than the length of their third side. Therefore, the side with length 1 cm must be the opposite the smallest angle, and the side with length 2 cm must be the opposite of the middle-sized angle. Using the inequality theorem, okay, we can't determine the exact measure of the angles without more information, but we know that the sum of the triangle is 180 degrees. Well, in a triangle where sides are 1 centimeter, 2 centimeter, and 7 centimeter, what is the size, the angle measure of the angle opposite to the 1 centimeter side? The angle opposite the side of length 1 centimeter in a triangle with sides of length 1, 2, and 7 must be the smallest angle. I thought you could know the three angles from just knowing the lengths. Maybe I'm wrong. In a triangle where sides are 1 centimeter, if the angle opposite to 7 centimeter is 45 degrees. In a triangle, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so... Now, I mean, that's easy. Is he refusing to do trigonometry? Is he... because that's easy. You just do 180 minus 45. That's too easy. Okay, it gives us example of trigonometric calculations. All right. Well, I mean, I'm sure you can pull some relevant answers to math questions. So definitely, there was a question I had said by super chat that we could ask. Write a comedy dialogue between a Honda CR-V and a Toyota RAV4. And a Toyota RAV4. Honda CR-V. Hey, Toyota RAV4, have you heard about the new hybrid version of the CR-V? It's going to be a game changer. Toyota RAV4. Oh, please, Honda CR-V. You guys have been saying that for years. You're still trailing behind us in terms of fuel efficiency. Honda CR-V says, oh, come on, RAV4, you can't deny that the CR-V has a more comfortable ride and better handling. The RAV4 says, oh, please, the RAV4 has a much more rugged exterior. We can handle any terrain, not just the smooth roads like you CR-Vs. CR-V says, ah, but the CR-V has much more spacious interior. You RAV4s are so cramped, it's like a clown car in there. RAV4 says, ha, at least we have more cargo space. You CR-Vs can barely fit a grocery bag in the trunk. CR-V says, oh, come on, RAV4, you know we both have our strengths and weaknesses, but in the end, it's all about what the customer wants. RAV4, you're right, CR-V, let's just let the customers decide which one of us is the better car. CR-V, agreed, may the best car win. Kind of dull. I would have expected a big ending to this, and there wasn't. But, I mean, most people can't deliver good humor like that on a request, on a specific subject. So, I mean, you may be disappointed by the answers of the AI, but don't forget that you wouldn't ask these questions to the random person on the street. They would be like, sorry, I can't help you, bye. So that is it for tonight. A very impressive performance by this AI. Personally, I am absolutely satisfied. So tomorrow will be the 31st, and it will be the passing toward the new year. We won't stay here until the midnight. That would be too late on Eastern time. But I'll be here, and perhaps we can talk about the year and talk about what we expect for 2023. John Gorras says, "Can it do jokes about white people?" White people, maybe. Certainly not minorities. Bye bye. Thank you.